Welcome to the House of Surgery, a podcast brought to you by the American College of Surgeons. In this series, you'll hear from and about surgeons in all specialties, in all practice configurations, and in all locations. Their success stories, advice, challenges they've overcome, and words of inspiration as they serve their patients with quality, integrity, and professionalism, and strive to heal all with skill and trust. In this episode, the medical director for ACS Cancer Programs, Dr. Ronald Weigel, talks with three of his colleagues, Drs. Daniel Baffa, Lori Kirstein, and Timothy Mullett, about the recent successful ACS Cancer Conference in Austin, Texas. In addition to the key insights and lessons learned from the conference, they also discuss new opportunities for clinical practice and what to expect this year and beyond from ACS Cancer Programs. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the participants and not necessarily those of the American College of Surgeons. Enjoy the program.
Welcome. I am Ron Weigel, and I serve as the medical director for the cancer programs for the American College of Surgeons. And I am here with Drs. Mullett, Kirstein, and Baffa. To talk about the ACS Cancer Conference, which we had February 22nd through 24th in Austin. And the topic of this cancer program was improving cancer care for all. And we had 3 days of tremendous interaction, great enthusiasm, and included individuals at all levels of care in cancer care in the U.S. and was really focused on the quality programs that we have, including the COC, the AJCC, the National Cancer Database, and the accreditation programs for breast centers and rectal cancer. And we had a tremendous involvement. The attendance was nearly 500 individuals that included chief executive officers, program directors, registrars, physical therapists, genetic counselors, navigators, nurses, and I think was a tremendous conference. As I said, much of the conference focused on what the Commission on Cancer is doing, and Dr. Timothy Mullett is the chair for the COC, and I'd be interested to for him to share with all of you his view of the cancer conference. Dr. Mullett?
Thank you, Dr. Weigel. This was a this was an excellent conference that we had that was really organized over the course of a year by Dr. Kirstein to be able to bring efforts that we are putting together both in the COC and the other accreditation programs you mentioned that allow us to be able to help influence the cancer care. And, you know, I think the title Improving Cancer Care for All was carried throughout the session, the conference schedule, to include areas of equity, areas of quality improvement for all of our cancer programs, which really responds to the care of over 75% of the cancer cases in the country. And so I think this is was a real opportunity for us to be able to highlight some of our efforts. I really found fascinating the pieces of the puzzle, if you will, that looked at our quality measures that are being evaluated by Dr. Baffa and his team to try and adjust cancer practice through providing measurements of cancer programs and really influencing their practice. We also looked at our quality improvement initiatives. Over the last several years, we've been embarking on several national quality improvement projects, and these are well-vetted, solid methodology, quality improvement projects that have adjusted care in cancer screening, in tobacco use in cancer patients, barriers to care, And now looking forward in this year in our examination of lymph node assessment in patients undergoing lung cancer surgery. And we have been able to show improvements in quality in all of these areas across the country. So it's been really exciting for us to see how that works. And the rest of the program was really looking at how our practices are all interconnected between what happens in the National Cancer Database, what happens with our cancer staging system, how we're looking at our cancer research program, and how we are adjusting how we are evaluating our care using research projects. And so it was very exciting to see it all come together in this conference. And I certainly would encourage anybody to look forward to participating next year. It's been on a growth phase for the last several years after we came out from under the pandemic, and really exciting to see over 500 people gathered to improve the quality of cancer care.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Mullett. Dr. Kirstein, as the organizer and moderator for many of the sessions, I would appreciate your insight and key review of the points that happened at the cancer conference.
Thanks, Dr. Weigel. You know, I do agree with both you and Dr. Mullett and sort of the synopsis. And just to add, you know, some of the things that we took into account in organizing for this year, we highlighted, obviously, a lot of our quality improvement projects and our quality measures. So, and also offered a course for some of our participants to learn how to engage in a quality improvement project. And this was a really small didactic program so that our programs could walk through steps that were problems at their own institution. And I think there's this commitment to teaching our people who participate in the accreditation programs how to really look at their own programs and improve the quality. And one of the highlights for me as we were planning the sessions and actually to hear them in person was the experience of some of the programs who shared their best practices on how they identified problems at their institutions and walked through them. For example, there was a wonderful presentation by a woman from a program in New Mexico who partnered with an insurance company to be able to increase screening mammograms in an underserved population. And she really took the time to walk through the steps of the project. And I think the people who are in the audience really were able to relate to this and how they could see this happening at their own institutions. And I think when we planned this program, we took the feedback from last year to be able to use these kinds of examples so that the audience could feel engaged and relate to what we're doing so that it isn't just people sort of speaking from above. The last part of it, which I really enjoyed improving on this year, was taking the health equity focus that we started last year and really bringing it throughout the entire conference this year. I think that the cancer programs are so dedicated to improving cancer care for all and making sure that everybody has access to the equal best practices and the standard of care. And so, you know, teaching our programs how to do this on a regular basis, I think, is sort of the focus of this course over the 3 days. And then finally, just, you know, one of the most encouraging and fun parts of this course from last year and into this year is that the audience really participates, that the questions that people ask are show how involved and engaged they are in the process. And that's really enjoyable to see. You know, we want people to be engaged in this process. We want people to want to do better for their patients and for their programs. And so it's really heartwarming to see how people are really just involved in this process over the 3 days. And just to add, you know, we really take the feedback seriously. And so that next year, hopefully we can take the feedback from this year and improve the conference even more.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Kirstein. Oh, I agree. I was impressed with how the level of detail that people were asking questions directly related to standards and achieving COC and maintaining COC accreditation, and how to really improve quality of cancer care through the ACS programs. And I just wanted to ask Dr. Baffa about his view. As most of you know, Dr. Baffa is a key driver for our National Cancer Database and has a lot of interest in data analysis and how that data analysis drives quality of our cancer programs. And I would be interested in Dr. Baffa's view on the program and a couple of the sessions that he was involved in.
Yeah, thanks. Whenever I attend a meeting, I ask myself the question, you know, why attend the meeting? What did I get out of it? How am I better off having been at the meeting as opposed to not? And I think the two things about this meeting were, number one, empowerment to improve the quality of care locally. So I really think that the local aspect of learning how to take these concepts, which seem somewhat non-specific quality methodologies and somewhat intimidating, and how do you take this toolbox and work locally? I had heard somebody say that during the pandemic, that we're not all in the same boat, we're not all in the same storm. And I think with quality, it really is a telling statement that the landscape is so variable, the challenges, the barriers, the needs are so variable based on different practice environments. And I think that this curriculum, I think, was very empowering from what I heard from other participants, to allow people to start chipping away at the local issues. And I think the other thing is, attending a meeting, you can hear questions that you may not think to ask yourself. And that is, I would say, this is a great example of a meeting where the quality of the content, the teachable moments, came as much from the questions that were asked as they were from the planned content. And so it was largely case-based. And so in the cases, had a range of practice environments. There were some community-based cases. There were national QI projects. There were standard-based QI projects. There were quality measure-based. So it was attempts to make things better, typically aligning around a best practice, and the source of the best practice was highly variable. And I thought that it was a highly transparent reflection of barriers and wins and losses along the road. And I would say I walked away recognizing even more that there are just so many ways to apply quality tools. And you hear the same sort of concepts, but in a slightly different version. And I think it resonated differently with different people. And so you could kind of, instead of having one teacher of this content, there were 10 teachers of this content that all had a different take, a different nuance. And I think that the audience connected to different people in different ways. So I think that was really fantastic. We did talk about new quality measures that were coming online. So we added in 2024, we're adding a breast measure, which is a neoadjuvant systemic therapy measure. We added a rectal measure, or we're adding a rectal measure, which is a neoadjuvant radiation for T4N0. We added 3 GU measures, a prostate measure, a kidney measure, and a bladder measure. And these actually were interesting, is that they don't follow our typical backbone. So for the prostate cancer, it's actually, the best practice is active surveillance for low-risk prostate cancer, which is the first time a measure is based on non-treatment. The kidney measure was a partial nephrectomy, was the quality measure. And for bladder, it is a intravesical chemotherapy measure. So, and Minhaj Siddiqui added, it went over these measures and the origin of these measures and the data that supports their use. He also talked about the importance of stakeholder engagement we really recognize that we want practitioners of different specialties to be really along the journey with us as we're developing new quality measures. And we did announce that we have an Annals of Surgery paper coming out that's a very transparent look at the development of quality measures for the Commission on Cancer, as well as how we feel they're best leveraged to improve care. So I really enjoyed, I love being at conferences where I learn a lot, and I learned a great deal personally, particularly from practitioners that are in community environments and some of the challenges that they're facing. I really thought it was a great conference.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Buff. I completely agree. The other notable address was the keynote address by Dr. James Gulley, who's the clinical director of the National Cancer Institute. And he focused on the fact that although survival for cancer has improved, it really remains the second leading cause of death in the United States. And he talked a lot about preventative efforts through screening, talked about some of the new treatment strategies that involve vaccination and immune therapies, and also how to use cell-based assays in the treatment of cancer. And I was impressed by his talk and the collaboration that goes on between the American College of Surgeons and the NCI, and hopefully we can continue to strengthen those roles. I wonder, Dr. Mullett, if you had any additional thoughts. I know you were there at his keynote address, and if you had any other thoughts about his presentation and takeaways from his message.
Absolutely. I agree. I thought it was a very stimulating conversation that he started, and his presentation covered the areas you mentioned. But, we've been very interested in trying to develop a better alignment between the Commission on Cancer and the National Cancer Institute. And I think there's real value in that. The COC has a focus on clinical quality and outcomes of cancer care for patients as they go forward. And the NCI is primarily a research organization. And yet his talk was really, I thought, giving real strength to our argument that there are a number of areas within the Commission on Cancer that are perfect opportunities to engage in research, whether that's using our national cancer database, whether that's using our standards and advancing screening like he was describing. There's right now we use fairly blunt instruments for screening of our cancer patients, age, tobacco history, gender, things like that. But I think as he was talking about the opportunities to advance immune therapy or other technology, we really can get into being able to turn screening into something that's much more specific about patients at high risk. And so I think just thinking about, we have a standard for screening, but is there something more that we can do to study that and align with the NCI and develop some research projects? And so I'm hopeful that his talk will carry forward with additional efforts that bring us closer to the NCI. We have several that have been working on in survivorship. We've been evaluating that. We have research projects that we're looking at with a grant that's currently submitted to the NCI to evaluate tobacco and cancer. We have other opportunities within our standards to be able to bring the NCI closer in terms of being a funding source or being a collaborator in learning more about how to improve the outcomes of cancer care. So while our missions are similar, I think the way that we go about these is a little bit different between what happens in our cancer programs across the American College of Surgeons and what happens in the NCI. But I really hope that we can continue to see that alignment with research.
Thank you, Dr. Mullett. Yeah, I completely agree. I think there's a lot of exciting things that we can do with NCI and the NCCN and other organizations that we need to create a greater partnership. You know, looking at the future, I want to ask Dr. Kirstein if she could comment on some of the discussions that we've been having about how to expand the footprint of the COC. I mean, the data that we have clearly shows that when a hospital becomes a COC hospital, there's improvement in quality care, cancer care, and outcomes for patients with cancer. And we've talked quite a bit about how to expand that footprint, as Dr. Mullet noted, about three quarters of the cancer patients in the United States are taken care of at a COC hospital. And we've talked about ways to expand that into rural and other areas, which are not currently COC hospitals, but may improve that. And I wonder if Dr. Kirstein could elaborate a little bit on what our plans are moving forward.
Sure. I mean, as you both mentioned, so there's about 25% of the patients across the country who don't get treated at a COC accredited program. And if you look at where the COC has its footprint across the United States, it's pretty obvious to note that in city centers and large urban centers, there are many COC accredited programs. And across sort of the middle and southern part of America, there are fewer and fewer highlighted stars on the map, so to speak. And so there have been a couple of states who have done a really good job at taking an initiative, Iowa, Kentucky, in which they had the major cancer center and the registry has engaged some of the smaller community hospitals in ways that they can partner together without necessarily creating an overburden for those small communities, so that with a partnership in a larger COC facility, perhaps it would be possible to have some sort of participation in accreditation so that we can bring some form of standards and at least data to these programs to show them not only where they stand now, but to be able to show them that when you partner with a COC hospital or have some sort of accreditation or some standards, that their own patients and their own communities that they serve have better outcomes with cancer. And so using these states as examples on a road map of how to do this, we hope to go forward and expand what we're doing in other rural states across the United States and engage some of our smaller community programs in areas that are almost medical deserts at this point, cancer deserts at this point. And certainly after we look at rural America, we can also look at some of the urban centers, which also have some issues with accreditation. But if you look at where we're really, where there's a paucity of care right now, it's probably in rural America. And so I think that's going to be our first foray into trying to increase that 72% up to, you know, at least over 80% in the near future. But there's opportunities there, and certainly there's no one path, but looking at Kentucky and Iowa and what they've done, I think is at least a blueprint which we can work off of and figure out where state to state we can, where we can create their own sort of collaborations with their larger cancer centers or COC programs in their state to make cancer care better for our rural communities.
Thank you, Dr. Kirstein. You know, I was going to bring in Dr. Baffa again to this conversation. He, you know, Dan, you've got a particular interest in databases and linking databases. And I was involved in a number of discussions, even just last week, involving NACER, which is the North American Association of Central Cancer Registries, as well as other registries, the SEER database and other state registries that develop data. And part of the COC is having registrars that are able to make sure we have data that we can trust, so that we can actually improve quality based on evidence through these databases. I know you have a particular interest in how might be best to link these databases, and I wonder if you could share with our audience some of your thoughts about what we might have to do in the future to improve how robust these databases are.
Absolutely. The pace of medical innovation and the pace of understanding who we are and what we're fighting is increasing at such a logarithmic rate that we are rapidly expanding beyond the capacity of any one data source. The things that are knowable, that are digitally recorded, that we should be factoring into decision making, but there's just no way that one data source can capture all of these pieces of information. And the thought is, could you take all of these repositories of data and link them together? And to preserve patient privacy, this data is typically captured without identifying information. And so where several data sources will collect treatment-related and some socio-demographic and socioeconomic attributes, others are very detailed for tumor profiling, and others are very detailed for patient outcomes. And we have developed, or we're working on a way of doing this using cryptography to take identifying information to create an encrypted token or tag that travels with your data, so that your de-identified data, no matter where it's stored, can be recombined and reunited to recreate a complete depiction of your cancer journey, of every cancer patient's journey. And, you know, time and time again, we see how important this sort of real world perspective of cancer care is. And there's been so many examples where a medication that a subset of us are taking can change the efficacy of chemotherapy, or some of our lifestyle habits can dramatically influence the efficacy of treatment. And some of our socio-demographic and socioeconomic attributes can radically change the impact of treatment. And so to really personalize medicine, we need to be able to study as many of these factors that could influence outcome to really say not what's better in general for cancer, but what's better for me specifically. And so this effort has to be done maintaining privacy and data security. And so that's really at the heart of what we're doing now, so that we can keep pace with all of the information that is becoming increasingly available.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Buffa. No, I think trying to get additional data that is rapidly being developed in terms of the genetic information, social determinants of health, other sort of things that we know are affecting cancer survival and outcome is going to be tremendously important. One of the initiatives that we have that we're going to be starting over this next year is to try to create a improved survival calculator based on many of the other parameters of cancer care that we know have an influence on outcome. And so not just adding to stage, but adding many other aspects of care and other, as I've mentioned, social determinants of health that can influence the outcome, and trying to bring all of that together in a calculator so that we can more better refine outcome for individual patients. And I think that's going to be one of the initiatives that we will hopefully be able to roll out over this next year. I don't know if Dr. Mullet or Dr. Christine, if you had any other thoughts about the survival calculator or additional plans to improve the programs that you all oversee.
Well, I'll start with that, and I think it is an exciting piece for us to be able to look at that calculator. It's really the first time that we've had an opportunity to really have this degree of personalized specificity on predicting outcomes for patients. Obviously, it's every patient's an individual, but this is a way to be able to look at what are the factors that are going to influence a patient's outcome. I think it's going to be very helpful for us to be able to be more specific than what we have now, which is based on simply stage and large buckets of experience that people have had with taking care of cancer patients, but really break this down into something that really is more personalized for an individual patient. And so I think it's just an example of how our programs are working together to be able to look at what the Cancer Research Program is doing with the National Cancer Database, and then how we are going to be able to apply that to the as a tool that our clinical programs and the Commission on Cancer will be able to use that. And so I think it's a powerful interaction between all of these different programs that we really have to learn from. And I think our other directions that we're going with our programs are looking at, we talked about expansion to consider a different path for rural cancer programs to be able to have more of an influence on those. We've recently released the pediatric cancer standards to try to understand how we can assist pediatric cancer programs with the way that they are delivering care, and frankly, learn from the pediatric cancer programs and how they frequently will bring research and clinical trial accrual is much higher in those programs. So I think as we're more inclusive, then we will be learning more about how we can adjust our standards for all patients. So I think our other areas that we're interested in developing are going to continue to look at how we influence the surgical management of patients in the in cancer care through our cancer surgical standards program, and how we can learn how to bring that into the Commission on Cancer and at an appropriate way. So it's very exciting. Dr. Christine?
Yeah, if I could just add, you know, I agree with Dr. Mullet completely. You know, just to tie it back to the cancer conference, you know, we did hear from AJCC and from pathologists who talked about how they stage. And I just want to highlight the importance of staging accurately and the use of the new AJCC tools to be able to do that for our patients. Because without proper staging, certainly the survivor calculator isn't going to be accurate, and certainly our NCDB data isn't going to be accurate. So just to put a plug in for the AJCC and some of their new tools, which we heard about at our cancer conference this year, and to remember how important it is to stage your patients accurately as well.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Christine. The AJCC, which has been published as an online book and is now going to be available online, and I think that's going to be a new opportunity for improving the value of the COC, because that will be available to all of the practitioners in the COC hospitals, and having that available online will also allow it to be linked to electronic medical records to improve the accuracy of staging. And that combined with synoptic reporting for pathology reports, I think will create an improved standard of care for cancer patients. Well, looking forward to next year, our cancer program next year is going to be March 12th through the 15th at the Hyatt Regency in Phoenix. So mark your calendars for March 12th to the 15th of 2025, which will be the next cancer conference for the American College of Surgeons. Well, I'd like to thank Dr. Mullet and Dr. Kirstein and Dr. Baffa for joining me today to talk about the 2024 ACS Cancer Conference, and look forward to having all of them involved next year. Thank you all very much.
Thank you for joining us on the House of Surgery podcast, brought to you by the American College of Surgeons. If you like this podcast, please rate it 5 stars and let your friends and colleagues know about the podcast. On social media, use the hashtag #HouseOfSurgery. You can learn more about the American College of Surgeons, its members, programs, products, and services at facs.org.